Well, hello and welcome everybody to ICMDA webinars. I am Dr. Peter Saunders, your host, the CEO of the International Christian Medical and Dental Association, which brings together over 80 national associations of Christian doctors and dentists throughout the world. And our emphasis today is very much on the D for dentistry of ICMDA. And speaking to us will be Dr. Tony Giles on the subject of maxillofacial surgery in sub-Saharan Africa. Quite an amazing story to hear. So it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Tony Giles, who initially graduated as a Bachelor of Dental Surgery in Sheffield in 1972, and then later became a Fellow of the Dental Surgeons of the Royal College of Surgeons in 1976. Those are letters you can't get anymore, apparently. And then he was accredited in oral maxillofacial surgery in 1982 and went on to do his doctorate in Leeds in 1984. So in other words, he trained as a dentist, but moved very quickly into oral and maxillofacial surgery. He was appointed first as a consultant in Luton in the UK in 1984, and then volunteered in a life-changing experience to work with Mercy Ships in Madagascar in June 1996, and then across Africa until he, as he said, retired from clinical work in the UK in 2000. And this enabled him and his wife, a nurse, to work across Africa half the year. And since 2007, they've worked alongside and training local surgeons and nursing staff and their multinational teams, try to build their capacity to deliver quality healthcare, aiming for sustainable development in oral and maxillofacial surgery. And since 2016, he's moved beyond Mercy Ships, now working independently and also developing a WhatsApp telemedicine consultation service. So it's our pleasure, Tony, to have you today. And please go ahead and give us your talk. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that introduction, Peter, and thank you everyone who are listening. But hopefully you can see my screen, and it's got a picture of Africa, and on the right are five organisations I've particularly worked with, and Mercy Ships, of course, that was mentioned, and the medical centre in Zao in Guinea, rural Guinea, and the Dreamland Mission Hospital in rural Kenya. The Smile Train is an organisation that has enabled free surgery in clefts to be carried out. And Elwha Hospital in Monrovia is where I'm doing quite a bit of WhatsApp consultations, including today. Now, I've been able to work in the last 25 years in 10 different African countries, mainly in West Africa with Mercy Ships initially, but also in East Africa, both with Mercy Ships in Madagascar and independently in Kenya and Uganda. And the Lord's enabled me to get a lot of experience in that time. And I think I've learned a tremendous amount from the people I've worked with. Very appreciative of the people I've worked with on Mercy Ships, which I think is a great organization, especially as an introduction to working in missions. And the pictured in this slide is the first team I worked with. Well, we aim for sustainable development by bringing in teams. Say this was our first team, and we do one-to-one mentoring of staff and help them to care for maxillofacial patients. Say our teams are varied in size, and we bring surgeons, nurses, anaesthetists, whatever is considered needed by the people who want our teams to come. And we were inspired to do what we do by 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2, where Paul says, "What you've heard from me before many witnesses, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." And I made a note that knowledge is power, but the scripture says, even if we're tempted not to pass that knowledge on, that we should do so to faithful people, and then that will multiply. I love the picture of Jesus being with me as I'm operating. It's a picture of Anne and I. We spent 20 years volunteering directly with Mercy Ships. And as you can see from the pictures, Anne does about three times as much work as I do. Now, Mercy Ships is a global Christian charity and aim to do physical healing through surgeries, dental clinics, and bring the practical message of God's love as a form of spiritual healing. This is the present Mercy Ship that we work on, which is the world's biggest non-governmental organization hospital ship, with five operating rooms and over 450 crew who tend to come from between 35 and 40 different nations. And each crew member pays their own way. Well, the need is that 2/3 of the world's population cannot get access to safe surgery, either because it's not there or they can't afford it. And a result that 18 million people are thought to die each year from conditions that require that surgery that they cannot get. And that's more than the number who die from tuberculosis, malaria, and AIDS. Mercy Ships tries to change the odds to eradicate diseases of poverty. There's a new ship, the Global Mercy, which should come into service this year, which is even bigger than the Africa Mercy. And Mercy Ships are always wanting volunteers. Now, the calling of Mercy Ships is to deliver that safe medical care and to offer free treatment and training in specific conditions, often related to the need of the country and also to those who will volunteer. And so far, Mercy Ships has served in more than 56 developing countries and provided services worth more than £1 billion English pounds. We've also trained more than 40,000 local professionals in their areas of expertise at different levels. This may be one-to-one mentoring of surgeons, or it may be in giving lectures on specific subjects. Now, Mercy Ship can be a bit like a speedboat. It's invited in by the president of the country and great pomp and circumstance when it arrives. It does a lot, do a lot of surgeries, but then it can go and then they can't do those surgeries. So Mercy Ships puts an emphasis on capacity building, building the capacity within the nation it serves so that they can do those surgeries once we go. And we call that sustainable development. Nowadays, we're working on land, and that means we're a bit like the plough, but we can be just as effective because we're able to treat far less while we're there with our team, but we're hopefully leaving behind us a team of people who have new skills and who are able to carry on doing what they've learnt after we've gone. When I first got involved with Mercy Ships, I went straight from the airport to join a massive screening. And there were thousands of patients there, many of whom we had to turn away because they were beyond the numbers we could treat while we were in the country, or they had untreatable conditions. These pictures show the crowds outside a stadium that the government had given us and the crowds inside the stadium. All those inside the stadium have been pre-screened. Through the inspiration of Dr. Gary Parker, the chief medical officer on the Mercy Ship, Anne and I had the idea of going up country to screen inland because people couldn't travel in the country we were in Liberia, and we were missing out on seeing the poorest of the poor. So with the help of the UN and the International Committee of the Red Cross, we were able to cover the whole country in two blocks of 5 weeks and to find patients and arrange for them to travel in, often by those same planes, to the Mercy ship to get surgery. We also had the opportunity to start doing surgeries, more minor surgeries, in the local hospitals, where often there was a great deal of heat and humidity, no running water, intermittent electricity. And it was a very different experience, but very gratifying. So we carried on doing our upcountry screening. This is in 2012 in Guinea. And I'm there working with John Erickson, who's a trained dental therapist, but is a wonderful all-round pioneer missionary and has a very good pair of surgical hands. We screened in local government hospitals, but those hospitals were just so dirty and poorly equipped that we decided, as we brought our own instruments, to use different places we could get clean. So on the left is the waiting room, which is a pastor's house. And then around the corner in that same room on his melamine table, which we've been able to disinfect, we would actually do surgery using my headlight under local anesthetic, removing cysts and lumps and bumps. On the right are three chairs, which are in a church. And this is in the doorway to a church that we're operating on a cyst on someone's forehead. And this is actually the son of a local doctor who preferred us to do his surgery there rather than in the hospital. I would put my few dental skills to good use, traveling around villages. We would show films about Jesus in the nighttime, projected from our vehicle onto a sheet that we tied between posts. And then in the day, we would pull out teeth. We found it was dangerous under the mango tree because if you look at the top of my head, a bird has used this as a toilet. So I swapped places with Anne. I found that John was much better at extracting teeth than I am. I started training local surgeons really back in 1998 when we were in Guinea. I got 6 months off from my job and I worked with now Professor Rafiu Diallo, who's looking over my shoulder, and also with Dr. Karamba Kava, who's the chief surgeon and a plastic surgeon now, both of them in Donkor Hospital in Conakry, the capital of Guinea, both very able surgeons. And Professor Rafiu is a maxillofacial surgeon who has become a good friend. I'd like to summarize the maxillofacial conditions we see. I'll run through very quickly. Cleft lip and palate, jaw reconstructions for noma, war injuries, accidents, and cysts and tumours of the jaw and salivary glands. To a lesser extent, osteomyelitis and old fractures, but I found with using WhatsApp now to do telemedicine that these conditions occur a lot more. Well, with cleft lip and palate, the picture is of a very happy child with a cleft lip, well fed, but she looks happy. Her parents have had a lot of pressure to dispose of her because she was thought to be a demon. And afterwards, she doesn't look so happy, but her parents and her family certainly were, because they were being shunned because of her. I'm showing her eyes. I've not made her anonymous because now she's in her 20s and you wouldn't know who she is. I hope she'll have a life and a family. We do lip repair normally at age 3 months or more than 4 kilograms, palate repair supposedly 6 months, but it's very difficult to find an African child who is fit enough. It's usually at least a year old. And because of the perceived problems of speech, we would do a pharyngoplasty at the same time as a palatoplasty for anyone older than 5 years on the nursery ship. And a pharyngoplasty is quite a dangerous procedure. So really it's considered too dangerous. Smile Train, the charity that will fund free surgery for their partners, will not fund a pharyngoplasty off Mercy Ship. So we will just do a palatoplasty. This child in Guinea only had a cleft palate, but she was also considered to be a demon, and her parents actually were given an ointment to rub on her to kill her by the traditional healer. The baby didn't die, and the mother took the child to another village where there was a Christian missionary nurse who sent her 400 kilometers to Hope Medical Center, where she could have the surgery. One of the problems we find in West Africa is the children who come who are very badly nourished, because particularly if they have a cleft palate, the parents, the mother is unable to feed the child. This is an example of a child seen on the Mercy Ship many years ago. And at 3 months old, he weighed less than 2 kilograms and had pneumonia because the mother was putting the food in the wrong way. Fortunately, she sought help, and there was then a beautiful blonde nurse, my wife, who could give the baby food. And there's the child at 4 months old, thriving, and at 5 months old, was fit for surgery and was handed off to her husband to do the technical work. And this child, who would have died, can now hopefully live a normal life. Again, he will be adult somewhere. With the Smile Train and with the different countries we've been in, we've developed feeding programs based on the staple diet in that area. And Smile Train says that the feeding programs we've developed have been their most successful. And so they are encouraging other Smile Train partners to adopt a similar feeding program. I really love teaching cleft surgery. I learnt clefts in 1981 from Professor Jean Delaire in France in a short few week trip there. And I particularly love working with Dr. Jean Faye Araduno at Hope Medical Center. He is a very, very skillful surgeon. God has blessed him with a wonderful pair of hands, and he's a godly man. And I've just loved training him initially in clefts and then in doing all the surgery, all the different types of surgery that we do on the Mercy Ship. A Millard cleft lip repair, and with a functional muscle reconstruction, which Delaire taught me, is very easy to teach. The medial cleft lip is short, the lateral lip is long. You cut a C on the medial one, which is the same length as the lateral lip segment, and then separate the layers and stitch them together. And it really isn't that difficult to learn. And Jean Yaraduno, Dr. Jean Fire, he these are among his earliest patients with such wonderful results for someone who had never treated a cleft before. Now he's able to do the whole range of cleft work, and the Hope Medical Centre is a Smile Train cleft partner, which means that the patients can get all the surgery done for free. Some patients have very extreme cases, like this child who has premaxilla that has grown further forward than the tip of the nose, with a very wide cleft palate and cleft bilateral cleft lip. And you can actually treat all of these in one operation, and those two photographs were taken just 4 hours apart. And the child had just woken up, not very happy. And the reason you can do that is that you can actually set back the premaxilla. Here in the UK and in developing world countries, children can get pre-surgical orthopedics, so the premaxilla will not grow that far forward. But you can, as long as you avoid damaging the growth center at the suture line, you can remove sections of the vomer behind that and then set it back. And this is the child. You make an incision and you use rongeurs, bone nibblers, to take out a segment, mobilize it, and then remove bone until you can set it back into a normal position. As long as you can keep soft tissue attached, you can keep the blood supply. And this isn't that difficult to teach either. I said on the Mercy ship we do pharyngoplasties. It's considered way too dangerous to do them outside of that environment, certainly in rural hospitals. But this 39-year-old man in Kenya, he came with a wide cleft palate and a cleft lip. We took out his rotated tooth, repaired the palate using a functional muscle reconstruction. And he didn't know he wasn't supposed to be able to speak and that he should have had a pharyngoplasty. He just spoke normally. 8 days after the surgery, he had developed normal speech. And so since then, at all ages, I have repaired their cleft palates. Sorry, I'll need to rush through now, I realise, with time. NOMA is cancer morbus. It's caused by malnutrition. I'll go back one. And an infection like measles between the ages of 2 and 6, and 80% die. Could have been treated with antibiotics and is preventable with vaccinations and good nutrition. But it's a complex surgical problem. This child was the first patient I ever came across with NOMA in Madagascar. And with 2 surgeries, we were able to make her look quite decent. When our Mercy ship returned to Madagascar in 2015, she came to say thank you. She was married with children. She was interviewed on television and is happy for her photos to be shown. When asked where she would be if she hadn't had that surgery, she started crying and she said, "I would have been dead." Another technique you can teach is a carapanzic flap to reconstruct upper or lower lips. It was developed in 1974 by carapanzic for people who had lip cancer. But it can be reversed very readily to repair an upper lip. You make the incisions in the skin, but you separate muscle fibers by blunt dissection and keep the nerves, the facial nerve branches. So these photos were taken a week apart, and she's already beginning to smile because you keep function of the lip. And this is a very easy technique to teach a good surgeon. A more extensive procedure, which you can also teach, is for nasal reconstruction, the scalping flap, where you go across the top of the head and use a section of skin from one side of the forehead, which you can fold to make the shape of a nose. It stays on a pedicle for 3 to 4 weeks, and then the flap is returned. We've done it for noses that people have decided to cut off or bite off, and also for this lady who had noma when she was a child and her nose had melted. And there you can see her with the scalping flap down. And then afterwards, she just has a skin graft on the section of forehead that we've used. Nowadays, we use the side of the forehead because that looks a bit better than using the front of the forehead. This particular lady actually proposed marriage to me. She was about 50. She didn't know her age, but she thought that I looked like a reasonable husband. Now she has a nose. When I said that I already had a wife through a translator, he laughed, and I said, I said I was honored, and he laughed again. He said, well, you shouldn't be honored. You're the third person she's proposed marriage to. Another example of an infective process, which is in the noma category, is ankylosis of the temporomandibular joints. It can be caused by a fall on the chin, where you get intracapsular fractures, but usually there's no history of trauma, and they have massive mushroom bone. And this patient had been treated by another group of surgeons who hadn't got him to do exercises after they did surgery to free the joints. I don't know what technique they used, but it re-ankylosed. And I was able to teach the local surgeons to, including a missionary surgeon, to do a gap arthroplasty and use the temporalis muscle as finger flaps. And he took the photo on the right 6 months later, saying he'd never seen successful joint surgery. But now, not only has he seen it, he can do it. On the ship, it's a wonderful privilege to work with Dr. Gary Parker. We haven't had to treat war injuries off the ship as yet, and this was very extensive surgery. This man, they tried to cut his face off. We had to do a delayed delta pectoral flap and put in a tissue expander in the scalp so that a month later we could bring the scalp down as a visor flap and put up the pedicled temporalis flap to reconstruct the cheek. And when they were released, he looked a little bit better. These again are techniques that can be taught. Fortunately, I've not seen anybody as serious as this since I left the ship. Another thing we can teach and treat are massive cysts. This is a dermoid cyst under the tongue. We had to allow us to be able to intubate him through his nose. We had to aspirate about 300 milliliters of fluid preoperatively. And at Elwha Hospital, by WhatsApp, we're able to get histories, even video or live camera. And this is a patient who had a large keratocyst that Dr. Simon Stretton Downs, who says he's a dentist, but really now is an oral surgeon from all the experience he's had. He was able to marsupialize this cyst, and he himself came up with the idea of using a removable silicone plug to keep the hole open so that can decompress the cyst until it's manageable to remove the remainder. Also see a lot of osteomyelitis at Elwha Hospital, and Dr. Simon has actually treated way more osteomyelitis patients than I have ever treated, because on the Mercy ship, we don't accept infected cases like this. And they also take a long time where you have to treat with antibiotics until you can get their mouths open enough to get out the sequestra. We do a lot of salivary gland tumours, and this particular man I remember because there's a groove in the parotid gland where the nerve went. This is a deep lobe parotid tumour. And I was not doing surgery so well that day, and I managed to pop the maxillary branch of the facial nerve. And just after I'd done it, Dr. Gary Parker came in, and I told him what had happened, and he prayed for me and for the patient, just for God's grace. And then when I looked again, I found underneath the fascia another maxillary nerve. I've never seen two maxillary nerves exactly the same position as the one that I popped. And I was able to release it and remove the tumour. And post-operatively, the patient had no facial weakness at all. Some patients don't fare so well. On the Mercy ship, a visiting surgeon had removed a salivary gland tumour 6 years earlier. And then she came with this huge multifocal recurrence because it was a mucoepidermoid carcinoma. She came to Hope Medical Center. So we had to remove the tumor and the overlying skin. I actually didn't have to do any of it because Dr. Jean Fire is such a good surgeon. Once the tumor and the skin was removed, I was able to show him how to do a cervical advancement flap. And he designed the scars you see. We had to sacrifice the facial nerve, but the patient was very pleased. And we use a solution that should hopefully stop any micro metastases. We keep the area swabbed with water. We make sure we put water in the wound until you get a white sheen everywhere. And that should have popped any tumor cells, we hope. This patient again is not anonymous because she featured on an African ER documentary. The two preoperative photos and a postoperative photo after she's had a bone graft. What we do initially at surgery is we remove the tumor and put in a titanium plate, and then 3 months later, the patient comes back, and from the outside, we put in an iliac crest bone graft. We found that this prevents the large number of patients who get infected if you put it in while it's in continuity with the mouth. So by doing a second stage procedure, you not only don't get quite so tired, but you get a much lower infection rate. We take the inner table of the iliac crest and use a curved gouge to take out the cancellous chips. And then we can slice up the plate. And if you have a saw, it's very useful. We don't do this very often, but you can shape it exactly. And you put the cortical plate part against the plate, the cancellous part outside, pack in the chips and then squeeze. And the plate is in the middle of their new mandible. Another thing that I've learnt is in removing large tumours like this cystic tumour in a lady who travelled three different countries, so she's only a teenager, trying to find someone to do the surgery, did this in Uganda, and we left the skin loose. We didn't remove any skin because it had, you see how shiny her skin is, it stretched the skin. If you remove the skin at the time, it's going to contract down and not give such a good result. And you can always do a smaller procedure later, leave it about a year. This young man had had this tumour since he was six, so we had to take skin away, had maxilla and mandible. He came back because he lives very close to Hope Medical Centre in Guinea. When he was 31, and the rib graft we put in his nose had gone, but everything else looked quite reasonable. Now, he was someone who, when he came, John Erickson, the missionary, brought him to the Mercy Ship. He'd been told he would die if he had surgery. And so afterwards, he felt so bad, he somehow had convinced himself, I think, that he was going to die. And despite everything we were doing, he didn't respond to medications and he was fading away. Until we got the elders on the ship to come and pray at his bedside, and he turned the corner. And one of the things that I've found over the years is the power of prayer. Hollywood films, a doctor would come and say, all we can do now is pray, and that meant the patient was going to die. Here, we pray at the beginning, as I'm doing here in the Gambia, in where all the local staff but one are Muslim. Or in this case, this young man, as I was examining his tumor, we split his tumor open and he poured out blood. I couldn't stop it. And we had to actually put a message on the ship's tannoy asking everyone to pray for him. And the prayer stopped the bleeding. Nothing else seemed to. And then this particular patient, people talk about miracles, but this one, I can't explain what happened. We did a biopsy and found a metastatic inoperable carcinoma in a 16-year-old. And the family had spent their money coming to another country. They came from Togo to Benin. And my translator said, will you pray for him? He was crying, his mother was crying, I was crying, and I found myself asking God to heal him. I had no faith that it would happen, but then it got better. And I just have no other explanation for it. Very quickly, this is just one of our first team to Guinea, and just working with them and sharing airways is a difficult thing for an anaesthetist not used to it. And Dreamland Mission Hospital, one of our teams, it's in Western Kenya, very rural part, but it's now one of the bigger cleft centers in Kenya, just has one main operating theater and a smile train partner. Loads of problems in Africa, but the cross is the solution. I think that we know how much we're worth to God when we realize the price he was willing to pay for us. And even an atheist has noticed how much Christian evangelism, as he calls it, make difference it makes in Africa. That's what is needed. Thank you very much.
I'm sure you will agree that was an incredibly inspiring presentation. I'm reminded of the words of Dr. Stanley Brown, the famous leprosy surgeon, who said, you cannot meet the need, but you can show how the need can be met. And I think, Tony, what you've done is show us how the need can be met, and not just through the incredible skills that you've picked up over a long career, but also in your passion and motivation to enable and train others and create sustainable solutions. And I loved your illustration of the speedboat versus the plow, that, you know, we can go in with good training and do amazing things by God's grace, but actually in terms of making a real long-term difference, you need to invest in the lives of others and train them, which is what you've been doing and illustrating with your talk. We have got a few questions that I could put to you, Tony. So question, greeting first from Tim Tusink, who I think both know, and Tim says, great to see you again. To his experience operating on cleft lips in Rwanda, he rarely saw any involvement of the palate, but perhaps those patients didn't survive long enough to see him. That was certainly my experience in Africa too, cleft lips, but not palates. Do you know what percentage of patients have only lip involvement? Which is much easier, of course, to repair.
No, it's very difficult to say, and I'm not a great facts and figures person, but I can tell you that there are a lot of cleft palates in the Gambia. far more than there are cleft lips. So there's obviously a genetic basis to it. But yes, in Guinea, far less cleft palates because they die. And in Guinea, I found out one of the reasons is that they think if a child only has a cleft palate, that they should be killed. Whereas usually okay. it's the cleft lips that are seen to be the demons.
But, yes, yeah, because they're more disfiguring, I guess. And it's the amazing transformation, isn't it, in the face. So for people who are wanting, who have perhaps got general surgical experience or whatever, and are wanting to get training in cleft lip surgery as opposed to palates, any suggestions about where to obtain that if they're working in the developing world?
Yeah, well, obviously the Mercyship visits different countries and you can get in touch with Mercyship. So I can give the reference for people who have registered. I'll send the sort of Mercyship's address and you can apply to volunteer and say that you might want to learn. Certainly this is something that Mercyships can train people to do. I'm certainly happy to have people. I haven't necessarily shown other people that I've trained, but there are several people who have come along with our teams and I've trained them as well as local surgeons. So certainly do that. And Pat's, so of course.
It's the beautiful apprenticeship model of surgery, isn't it? And that answers another of the questions. People asking, how could they join and get involved in this work? And we'll put a link to Mercyships and a contact in the letter that we write you after this webinar. Another question, how do you engage with local churches as part of your emphasis on sustainable development? And I know you've been, as you say, you've been involved with mission hospitals, but also Mercyships.
Yeah. Well, with Mercyships employ translators, and a lot of those translators are pastors. And so crew members do tend to get invited to their churches to speak. So I've done that on any number of occasions. I've even been invited onto Christian radio in Benin. So when I wanted to get to the airport, the person asked me to, who'd heard me on the radio, asked me to pray for him in the airport. So that was, so yes, we get to know our translators. Obviously in the mission hospitals, I see myself as facilitating their mission. Occasionally, because I have some rudimentary French, I've been able to share the gospel in French. And it's very interesting how my French, on one particular occasion with Professor Raffiou, suddenly became very, very good when I was sharing the gospel. I was thinking, wow, where's this come from? So yeah, but really we're in the mission hospital, we're facilitating their ministry. We're not coming in to do the evangelism for them. We're meeting a physical need, but at the same time, a spiritual need. But yes, we do relate a lot with the churches and work with the Christians.
It's the glorious diversity of the body of Christ, isn't it? Everyone bringing their particular gift to pray together. And interestingly, to hear your testimony about Holy Spirit mediated language or assisted translation. People have asked about language. You've worked in a lot of different African countries. We know the huge diversity of African languages across Africa anyway. How much language facility have you had to have to do this? And has it been a limitation in your work in any way?
Well, as I say, we've always worked with translators and it can make things a bit slower. I try and speak French when I'm in Francophone countries. Sometimes in local hospitals, when I was with the ship, I would go in and I had to speak French because they didn't speak English. But I did try and learn some local languages, particularly Fulani, because it was often difficult to get Fula translators. And Professor Raffiou taught me quite a bit of Fula in terms of have you got any pain, which is actually very close to house the family, but I would learn that. And one time on the ship, I had to use Fula because there was no Fulani translator, and I amazed the other translators in that. But yes, it would be very difficult without translators. And now I've worked with so many different languages, all I learn is the greetings. I don't try and pick up the others. It's not simple. They're long enough.
that will be a great encouragement to many budding surgeons wanting to follow in your footsteps. So a question about registration. Has it been a problem, a difficulty maintaining UK registration? And has there been a problem working in lots of different African countries which may have their own requirements?
Well, I've done a lot of online registration. I've had friends in the UK who've been involved in that, and they've given me sort of tips. So I do a lot of online study. I've been home. I've done 80 hours of continuing medical education. It hasn't been a problem. I did get randomly checked one time, and I sent them 300 hours of verifiable stuff, so I don't think it's been a problem to keep my registration. Now I've been around such a long time, having been qualified originally in 72. I have a grandfather clause because I'm a singly qualified maxillofacial surgeon. I was one of the last to do sort of the apprenticeship thing, and so I'm registered with the General Dental Council as what is now a surgical specialty. Maxillofacial surgery is a surgical specialty. So I think, you know, because I'm not really causing anybody any trouble, they seem to let me through okay.
Does Merseyships offer a residential training program?
It's been talked about, and it did happen with PAX through Dr. Bruce Steffes for a while. He used to come on board the ship quite a lot with the surgery, and we would help. And Dr. John Fire spent 3 months on the Mersey ship as part of his PAX training, a month of which was in maxillofacial. But it was at the time, because that he was going to be general and orthopaedic, he didn't really do any maxillofacial surgery. No, I don't know yet. See, it's 5 years since I last actually worked on the ship, although I do still do promotional talks for Mersey ships. I think each person would need to contact them to see, but you can get something arranged, I'm sure, particularly if you're in an African country.
Yeah.
And you are.
Now, a lot of African countries in particular don't have the infrastructure to be training surgical subspecialists in any specialty to this level, and certainly the work you're doing in MaxFax. The ideal solution, I guess, in the future is that every African country would be training people like this to work with their indigenous populations. But how do you see currently the balance? Is there still a big role for surgery provided by Christian charities like Merseyships going into the future, and how can people get involved in it?
Yeah, well, I think the short answer is yes. Merseyships it goes to the poorest areas, and with an emphasis on training. If there's something you can train in, then you can volunteer to train. But I can guarantee you'll learn at the same time. So I think that, you know, it's going to go into the future. Certainly in West Africa, it's quite a way behind what East Africa, I would say.
Yes. Yeah. And Merseyships pretty much, as I understand, concentrates on head and neck surgery, isn't it? It's from the neck up primarily that they're doing.
Yeah. There are particular general surgical procedures that they have traditionally trained people in with, which has sort of been hernias and sort of thing, thyroid surgery, eye surgery. And then otherwise head and neck, because that's the way it worked out that initially the long term was a long term eye surgeon, a long term maxillofacial surgeon on the ship. So that's how it worked. And because of the lack of specialist surgeons across Africa, then there really is a need to both do and to train in maxillofacial.
You've told us a number of inspiring stories about people who've had their lives transformed by surgery, not just meeting the physical need, but also the psychological and social and spiritual needs as well. Have there been sad stories of patients dying as well in that journey you've had?
I mean, obviously patients can die on the ship following surgery, and also even back home, you know, afterwards. You know, you can't cure everyone. You do your best. I think the saddest thing is the patients that you can't treat. And my wife was integral in setting up the palliative care program on the Mercy ship for the people we couldn't treat, the people you have to turn away with conditions that the ship can't treat, but would have been treated if they were here. So, and that's an ongoing ministry of Mercy ships now, where they have a team that will go and visit people in their homes and help them with dressings and pain control and give spiritual help, read the scriptures with them, pray with them. And a lot of them have come to actually have an encounter with Jesus in that situation. And some of my patients, remember a particular parotid patient that is in, we didn't have, it was years ago before we had our CT scanner, and it was a fixed tumor and it went straight in. I had to stop at the dura, and it was a clear cell carcinoma. And I had to tell him that, you know, there was nothing more we could do. And I prayed with him, and he was Fulani, and with a Fulani translator who herself was not a Christian, she volunteered. I shared the gospel and he responded through her. I had to double check. He wanted to know Jesus because of the love. And so I prayed with him and she said the Fulani words, although she herself was not a believer, and witnessed him coming through to faith.
Well, it's a wonderful story to finish on. And just a reminder that that Jesus healed a lot of people and people with terrible deformities and disabilities, but that ultimately he came not to empty the hospitals, but to empty the graveyards and to call us into a wonderful new heaven and a new earth that's coming where bodies will be restored. So thank you so much for your testimony of walking in the Lord's footsteps and restoring broken bodies through maxillofacial surgery in sub-Saharan Africa. And I'm sure there are those who are listening. I know there are a lot of dentists on the call today who will be inspired by this. And if you're young and just starting out in training, then I hope this talk has really inspired you to think about what you could do with God's help in time if you're willing to commit yourself to the training that's necessary to be able to deal with work like this, and that you've been inspired by Tony's testimonies about the many people he's trained as well to do these procedures. It's not impossible. It's about being willing and available and having the right training. Once again, thanks, Dr. Tony. Thank you, everyone who's been with us. Thank you to our translators and to Josh. And we hope to see you again soon on ICMDA webinars. God bless you.